We live in challenging times. And I'm sure that we all have different ways of meeting our lives in the world, but I think one that often is something we do is that we hope. So this morning I'd like to talk to you a little bit about hope. I've been thinking about this. I had a folder on this for, I don't know, maybe 3 years, and finally just took a breath and jumped in. I'm sure we all know what hope is, at least for us. And I assume we can agree that if our hope is based on a positive fulfillment, right? Because sometimes I know we can have negative desires and hopes, you know, like I hope when your eyes get squinty and your voice gets sharp. But that if our hope is based on a positive fulfillment rather than these negative desires of things like anger or hatred or revenge, that when we are looking at something that benefits ourselves and others in the world, that we can generate and hold a stronger hope. So perhaps let's just first look a little deeper at what hope is. And I have come to believe that hope is simple, yet many-layered. Winston Churchill, who was certainly the spokesperson for hope during World War II, had this to say. I wish I could do a church. I can't. All the great things are simple. Oh, my goodness. That was my timer. Excuse me. Sorry, Winston. We'll try again. All the great things are simple, and many can be expressed in a single word: freedom, justice, honor, duty, mercy, hope. One of the things I thought he was saying in that was that in their simplicity, all of these are basic values of life and human character, qualities and characteristics which support caring for one another. So hope may be simple, but to hold hope in its fullest, I believe we need to see that although some of the aspects of hope may appear to be opposites, they don't exist in contradiction or in opposition to one another. Rather, they are just aspects of the full range of hope. On the one side, there's Emily Dickinson's metaphor of hope as fragile as a small feathered bird, or perhaps a delicate flower. And in some ways, hope is fragile. And some of that fragility arises from how we hold our hopes. It flourishes when held in our open palms, yet is crushed when grasped tightly in closed fists. And I'll talk about that a little more later. On the other side, hope is also strong, even powerful, and requires strength and courage on our part. Bishop Desmond Tutu observed that hope is being able to see that there is light despite all the darkness. Author Anne Lamott believes that hope begins in darkness. And if that's true, then the light of hope is strongest when our darkness is the deepest. Hope in the darkness takes courage. Hope is also strong because it doesn't exist alone or in a vacuum. I believe that hope grows entwined with both faith and trust, and all three of these are deeply planted in the fertile soil of love. So when we're seeking hope or working to sustain it, we can have faith in it, trust in its possibilities, and we can know that we are all sustained with and by love. Philosopher Susan Griffin has a perspective on how love nourishes hope. Hope brings something inside you to life, and perhaps it is just the full dimensionality of your own capacity to feel. And I believe part of your greater capacity to feel is hope. So how do we find and sustain it? Michelle Obama, in her book, The Light We Carry, offers strategies for finding balance and hope in an uncertain world as she encourages us to remember that every small hope we hold is important when she says, "You may not always have a comfortable life, and you will not always be able to solve all of the world's problems at once, but don't ever underestimate the importance you can have, because history has shown us that courage can be contagious and hope can take on a life of its own." Again, trust and faith. Trust the hope you hold, trust that it is enough, and hold it in the faith that it can ripple out to others and the world. Author Barbara Kingsolver tells us that first you have to find it, when she says, "The very least you can do in your life is to figure out what you hope for." So you have that opportunity this morning. And the most you can do in life is to live inside that hope, not admire it from a distance, but live right in it, under its roof. I believe she's pointing to the truth that hope is not a thought or a concept, it's not an emotion or a feeling, and it's not a wish. It may be an aspect of prayer, if prayer works for you. At its deepest, it is an internal state of being of your whole self. Mind and body, heart and spirit, you embody a state of openness to possibilities that may not be observable or accessible in the present moment. And although hope is a longing for something more, something better, it always requires a willingness to commit to and work to make it come into your life or into the lives of others. The best kind of hope is when you're willing to plant the seed and then do the work to tend to the garden to help it bloom and grow. Without your commitment to hope, it can become just wishful thinking, a whisper, a shadow. A shadow of the embodied fullness of aspirations we are willing to work for to help them flourish. Once we know what hope we can hope for, and if we are willing to commit to it, then we can see more of the layers of hope, and we can see that how we hold hope is really important. We often hold hope for others, and we need to see the layers, or as Joni Mitchell sang in her folk song, we need to see both sides now. We need to see the two sides of how we hold hope for someone else and how we hold hope for ourselves when we're holding hope for others. Both require us to look at expectations, which is another definition of hope, that hope is an expectation. So what are our expectations? What are we hoping will happen? Frequently, we can get caught in what Joni Mitchell refers to in Both Sides Now as love's illusions. When we hold expectations of what we want to happen, what we think is needed, often we are also unconsciously seeking to relieve our own discomfort at seeing those we care about struggle. We want to dispel their pain, partly to dispel our pain, at their pain. That's part of the illusion of expectation, because expectations are usually pretty well-defined outcomes, often designed not only to help our loved ones, genuinely, that is our hope, but also to bring us comfort. And the path to hope for someone else is not about what feels good to us. It's about what's best for someone else, regardless of what that is or how it makes us feel. So our unconscious expectations can help to create this tangle, these illusions of love. We can genuinely carry expectations in the hope for others, but that unconscious need to avoid or release our own discomfort may influence our definition of what we are holding as what is best. And expectations are always tightly grasped to hold on to that limited definition of what we think hope is, what we think is best. Our anguish for our loved ones is not the primary issue, the reason for hope. And I only know one way out of that tangle, and that is just release your grasp on everything we think is best. Release our grasp. Whatever we think is best for someone else, recognize our own need for comfort, and that's okay. Just recognize it. And hold hope gently in our open hands, remembering trust and faith and love. It's scary business. And it's no small task, I know. I struggle with this. But just remember, hope is always about possibilities, something better, something more, even when we generally want only the best for someone else. If hope is always about possibilities, there are possibilities we don't know or don't want. Or can't imagine. We need to hope for what we don't even know, for that which is outside the limits of our defined expectations. We need to allow the unfolding of hope into reality by dropping our tight grasp on our fondest expectations and allow for new forms and new possibilities. And finally, how do we sustain our hope? Dr. Jonas Salk, the inventor of the polio vaccine, said, "Hope lies in dreams, in imagination, and in the courage of those who dare to make dreams into reality." And if hope lies in dreams, it's not a dream we can just watch, like watching a TV show or going to a movie or going to a play. We are all players in our hopes, important characters in what we hope to unfold. Our part may be, in some cases, simply the persistence of holding the hope and releasing it over and over and over again into the universe, in prayer, in positive thoughts, in conversations, in whatever we need to do and can do to generate our hope into a reality. Hope is a practice to be practiced regularly, just as we practice eating to nourish us and sleeping to restore us. All of our life patterns, everything from the regular beat of our heart and the rhythm of our breath and the things we do to sustain ourselves to keep us alive, they are all patterns of repetition. Some of them happen naturally and unconsciously, and some of them we have to practice. So hope must be kept alive with the energy of our thoughts and actions, our willingness to allow for more than we can even imagine, and our willingness to accept what comes, even when it is not exactly what we thought it should be. We need to allow the unfolding of hopes into realities by dropping our tight grip on our fondest expectations and allow for new possibilities and forms. I think I repeated that. I think it's worth repeating. And in our accepting of what comes when we hope, we may also find that our hopes don't manifest full-blown. Rather, they may progress one step at a time. So How do we know what every step will be? If we're open and accepting, then something that doesn't seem like much or may seem to have nothing to do with our hope, or maybe something altogether not what we hoped for, it may be the next step in an unfolding, continuing process. Perhaps in the steps taken, the steps missed and tried again, and even in the flourishing, there may be more than we could imagine. And if we ignore or miss or reject what comes, we may limit our hopes. I believe that hope resides in the liminal space of the in-between, that threshold of crossing from one reality to another, from what we hope for into what we hope will be. And we rest in that liminal space of threshold and passage and in between. In some ways, it is the space of nothing, the fragile quality that takes strength to persistently hold, yet resides gently resting in our open hands. As a pebble dropped in water, may our hopes ripple out into the world. And since I've said several times, rather vehemently, that we need to practice hope, I'd like to offer you a little breath-by-breath practice that may help you. Some of you know I teach Tai Chi and yoga and Qigong, and I'm a fumbling meditator, but all of those practices frequently link staying in the practice to our breath. Here we are, we're breathing. There's our inhale, and if you can feel your inhale as where we receive, where we allow, and where we accept, and we exhale. And if we can feel how when we exhale, we release, and we offer, and we give, and then find that little liminal space. Take a breath for a moment and see if you, right now, and see if you can feel, take two or three, that right before the change, after the inhale and before the exhale, there's a tiny little space which also exists after the exhale and before the inhale. It's there. Can you feel it, that tiny little pause? So I would offer to you, and this is my go-to practice, especially when I'm at that point. I have a friend who used to talk about when she was really upset, she had live animals on her head. You know those points where we're just, you know, and we can't anything? Just breathe, breath by breath. And if you can remember, feel those possibilities of what you take in, what you release out, and that place in between that is tiny and yet connected to the infinite, whatever that may be, where our hopes reside.